You're listening to Freed on Business. To talk to Jim and his guests, call 305-541-2350. That's 305-541-2350. Now, back to your host, Jim Freed.
All right, and we're on with my friend, my good friend, and now I'm going to butcher his name, Charles Foschini. Did I get it close that time?
Foschini.
It's Jim Fry, just for the people that don't really know. Now, Charles is with Burcadia.
You got that one right.
Well, this is the people that pay the bills. And he is the co-Florida market leader with his partner,
Mitch Simberg, Chris Sapone.
There you go. I forgot Chris the last time around. Hey, Chris, thanks for helping us set all this up. And Charles capitalizes big buildings around the state of Florida. So, Charles, welcome back.
Thank you.
So, we were talking multifamily. You guys do office, right?
Yeah, we really fund in all the food groups, many times through a correspondent. We're known for Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae. We're a direct lender there. We use the Berkshire Hathaway balance sheet as a privately held company to advance those loans and then sell them off to the agencies.
Oh, that's really cool. Now, what are you seeing as far as where we are is ramp out to the cycle? I hate asking that question. Everybody gives an answer that's baseball oriented. No innings are allowed here. But, you know, the president probably bought us, in my opinion, at least 18 more months with his tax reform. Gas prices are sucking up a little bit of that money they were going to put back into people's pockets. How much time do you think we're going to have in what I would consider to be a fully stabilized market right now?
So the good news for you is I'm not a sports guy, so I can't talk about innings. But I can tell you, I understand the supply and demand laws, and I'd really have to look at both presidents. So the prior administration put in a lot of legislation, and that has slowed down the path of new construction because a lot of banks felt that they couldn't make construction loans anymore. In very simple terms, it used to be if I lent you a dollar, I'd have to set aside a dollar. Under the new legislation, if I lent you a dollar, I'd have to set aside $1.50. The new president, very pro-business, is taking a look at the government bureaucracy and pulling it back. And I think today there was a lot of movement on the Dodd-Frank. So you're going to see that in the next 6 to 12 months have some banks rediscovered what they're really supposed to do and get back in the construction lending business. So that gap of time, which has almost been 2 years, has really taken a lot of speculative construction out of the market, which is primarily commercial. You build and tenants come. And it's slowed down the path of progress for some very well-heeled projects that just weren't capitalized by folks that don't need the money. So if you're a REIT, a major institution or fund, and you could live with a 50% construction loan or none at all, you got it, and you came out of the ground. But if you're most folks that need 65 to 80% of cost to come out of the ground and want to contribute your land at value, not basis, you didn't get built. So that's going to give us an extended period of time just because the supply and demand metrics is not there. And then when I take a look at the economy and growth, we're doing great. I mean, look at the stock market. That's very reflective of corporate America, and corporate America needs space. They're going to take space. You look at the sector of industrial. Industrial was really been rediscovered and reimagined in this cycle because of what's happened in the technologies with Amazon and things of that nature. So it's no longer about mortar and bricks and retail as much as it is about transportation logistics, and that is very much favored industrial.
100%. In fact, a friend of mine just built an industrial product up in the Carolinas, right in the border between North and South Carolina, sat there vacant for all of 2 months, and then Amazon leased the whole thing.
There you go.
That's it. And, you know, high five to my friend who shall remain nameless, but he knows who he is because he listens all the time. Anyway, so...
Well, if he needs a permanent loan, he can call me. We'll work on that together.
Oh, I love you. Hey, if you... I'm actually going to write that down. So, my gosh, now you got me blushing. You're blushing, too. Well, see, we make business here on Freedom Business.
Oh, okay, I'll blush.
It's radio. No one's blushing.
All right. Well, we are. We're actually... Okay, it's true. So, Charles, that's industrial. That's office. Let's talk about where a lot of our friends were this past week, retail. What have you been hearing bubbling up out of Las Vegas from the big retail conference?
So I'm not a sports guy. I'm not as much as a retail guy either. most of my business has been in office structuring deals and multifamily. But when I look at retail and retail, who's doing well? The folks that are doing well are creating experiences where people want to go. Or they have very service-oriented retail. Masana Genvi doesn't show up in a drone, right?
Correct.
People still want to go out and eat and have experiences. If you want to get your nails done and pedicure, manicure, you have to go somewhere to do that, so, or do it yourself. And, you know, I believe that the folks that are building retail or owning retail and imagining it to a place where people need to go or want to go are going to do well. Grocery-oriented retail, as much as people are getting that delivered with Instacart and things of that nature, the folks at Instacart still go to the grocery store, right?
Sure.
So I believe that that retail will continue to do well. And, you know, the big box type retail, the power center, the category killers, the downside of that is we may not need that type of retail as much anymore. The upside of it is most of those are incredibly strong infill locations and can be reimagined and redeveloped in a variety of ways over the next cycle.
Can't wait. That's my big dream, is redeveloping all those infill shopping centers with what I call pro forma space on the end. So, Charles, what do you think real estate capital markets future is going to look like? Is there going to be some kind of new products? You know, we had some people thought that the new wave was the internet. The internet really hasn't come through as far as like this crowdfunding thing goes. So what is a new innovation that you think is going to impact the real estate capital markets?
You know, our company invests a lot of money on technology, and being privately held and being backed by Berkshire Hathaway, we can do that in a very fleet of foot way. What our clients are telling us, what our servicing portfolio is telling us, is that trends are really important. To be able to look at a multifamily rent roll and see where the bad debt and collections are coming from, to look at an industrial portfolio and predict how the rollover is going to go. You know, that type of technology, I believe, will really help disrupt the industry and have people be very strong in terms of what they can deliver to a loan. As far as replacing what we do, you know, this is still a people business. Things work on relationships. People have to understand, you know, artificial intelligence is only going to go so far. You need a level of trust. You need a level of acumen. You need a level of knowledge. And it's a local experience. You know, you can drop Class A industrial in the middle of nowhere and it stays vacant. You put it in South Florida, it gets leased up and bought at a four cap.
That was fabulous. So you actually made me forget my next question. That was terrific, Charles.
I didn't think you had questions. You said this was all off the cuff.
It is all off the cuff, but it's terrific stuff. You made me laugh and you made me forget. I was going somewhere after that. So then what is the next big market in South Florida that you think is going to come? You know, I do all this in-town stuff, and we work in Wynwood. We work in now the area north of Wynwood, the Design District, in the area north of that, then the area east of that, the area west of that. And what I've come to see is that all of the neighborhoods are beginning to become vertically integrated because transportation makes it so tough to get from place to place. Do you think that we're heading towards more of a consolidated situation too, where the stuff is more concentrated? And I guess that kind of ties in with the transportation with Brightline, because I heard the train go by. So you know
I'm watching planes take off and land, and even though it's Memorial Weekend, there was a lot of traffic getting here. It was 4 miles and it took me an hour.
I thank you for being a mention coming. We
okay.
Appreciate it.
It was a pleasure. I would have come if it took 2 hours, but the bottom line is that's not getting any better. It's only going to get worse. And the infrastructure and the improvements that we can make aren't going to alleviate the problem. They're just going to help us deal with it better. You know, South Florida is 13 miles from the Bay to the Everglades. That's true in Dade County. That's true in Broward County. That's true in Palm Beach County, its widest point. You go to New York and you've got Madison Avenue and Broadway and Fifth, and you can keep going down. You have a great grid. We have US 1 in Biscayne Bay. So those are our grids. So you're either floating or driving. And to use the mass transit, that's going to be real helpful in circulating us around, but it's not going to get rid of the problem. So that's a long answer to, I believe we're going to continue to have nodes of development. I think if you look at life from Google Earth and see the midtowns, we're going to have a lot more midtowns from Palm Beach County South.
Now, I know you're a professor at UM. I know that you teach a bunch of the kids there. Do you use the case study method, or how do you do that?
So I was an adjunct there for almost 14 years. I passed the baton a year ago when I accepted the Brigadia position. But I taught with a case study method. What we did in a four-day seminar was we would build a Excel spreadsheet, and I would show folks the different risk profiles between a developer, an investor, and an operator. And then being active in deal doing, I would bring in what I would call tales from the trench, and I would pass around an investment book and tell the class about something we were either selling or financing. It was a pretty fun class to teach, and it seemed like I had a good time with my students. I hope they had a good time too.
Yeah, I got any students that I might know that are maybe today practitioners?
You know, most of the students, when I took the class as a law student myself, were far senior to my age and were really looking to get a very specific set of knowledge to use in their law practice. And it was an LLM, which in the law, you get your doctorate first and then your master's. That's the LLM. As a teacher of the class, it really flipped. And most of it was very young kids that had just passed the bar, hadn't yet taken the bar, and were really looking to get involved in real estate and saw Florida as the place to do it, and South Florida specifically, based on all the things we have going on. So there's a lot of rising stars in my class, and I'm sure you'll be hearing from them soon if you're not already.
Well, Charles Foschini?
You're good, Jim.
I'm trying. I'm getting there.
Good.
Listen, I love you, Charles. I want to thank you for coming on and letting me beat it up a little bit. Like I said, we've got family office, capital markets coming up after this. Maybe you can stick by and give us your insights on that, too.
I'll stick around.
All right. We got DJ Van Curen. He's holding on the phone. He writes a brand new magazine that focuses on that. We're going to talk about his new magazine and all kinds of other stuff. He's on the Forbes Council as well. So we're going to have some great real estate stuff as we continue the theme of capital markets through the day. Wanda. Rocket!